This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3, and we're streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's currently 24 degrees out at the airport, and it is windy. Winds out of the west at 40 miles per hour, gusting to 63 miles per hour. Tonight, it's going to be breezy and chilly again. Areas of blowing snow clear with a low around 16 degrees overnight. We'll see northwest winds of 25 to 35 miles per hour, gusting as high as 50 miles per hour overnight. Tomorrow, breezy. Getting less breezy, though. Sunny with a high near 30. We'll see winds out of the northwest 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. And then it looks like the wind's going to give us a break, maybe on Sunday with a high near 37. Coming up, education funding is a top topic in Juneau. How Kodiak Island Borough School District is preparing. That's just after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. Washington is signaling support for Kyiv today on multiple fronts. President Biden, sitting alongside the German chancellor at the White House, says they are working in lockstep to help Ukraine. On the same day, the U.S. Attorney General made an unannounced trip to Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced another $400 million aid package and told Russia this will go on for as long as it takes. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
The latest package includes more ammunition for the U.S. HIMARS and howitzers already in Ukraine, as well as funds for maintenance and training. Secretary Blinken says in a statement that the U.S. will continue to help Ukraine militarily on the battlefield so that it is in the strongest possible position at the negotiating table. There are no signs of any talks, though Blinken says Russia alone could end the war. That's the message he took to the group of 20 meeting in India this week, too, where he met briefly on the sidelines with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. It was their first face-to-face encounter since the war began. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
Disbarred lawyer Alec Murdoch starts a life sentence today without parole for the murders of his wife and son. He addressed Judge Clifton Newman at the South Carolina sentencing.
I'm innocent. I would never, under any circumstances, hurt my wife, Maggie. And I would never, under any circumstances, hurt my son, Paul Paul.
Well, and it might not have been you. It might have been the monster you become when you take 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 opioid pills.
Murdoch's lawyers say they will appeal. The National Weather Service is warning of the potential for tornadoes in parts of the southeast today. Damaging ones already touched down in Texas and Louisiana, part of the same system that brought mounds of snow to mountainous parts of California. A Tennessee state lawmaker is facing calls to resign for controversial remarks about executions. Mariana Bacayao of member station WPLN reports.
Tennessee has paused lethal injections for death row inmates. So during a hearing on different execution methods, Republican Representative Paul Sherrill offered a suggestion.
Could I put an amendment on that? It would include hanging by a tree also.
Black legislators call the statement racist, given Tennessee's history of lynching. Sherrill has apologized, but Black Caucus Chair Sam McKenzie says Republicans should speak up.
The GOP needs to come out and call this what it is, to look at Representative Sherrill's history in the 113th General Assembly and say, if we don't stop this now, where does it stop?
Sherrill has also proposed changing a street named for civil rights activist John Lewis to President Donald Trump Boulevard. For NPR News, I'm Mariana Bacayao in Nashville.
This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
And for KMXT, I'm Kirsten Dobrath. Gusty weather has been causing disruptions for travelers across the Kodiak Archipelago this week. The National Weather Service issued a high wind warning for the island with gusts of up to 80 miles per hour forecasted for the city of Kodiak. Alaska Airlines canceled flights to and from Kodiak on Wednesday. Thursday afternoon's flight from Anchorage was able to make it in after a morning of cancellations. A spokesperson for the Seattle-based air carrier said via email the company experienced cancellations across the state this week due to extreme winter weather. This week's windstorm also affected Alaska Marine Highway System ferry service to and from the island. The Testamina was supposed to make its first trip of the season to Kodiak from Homer on Friday. That's today. That sailing was canceled due to hurricane-strength winds and heavy freezing spray on the west side of the island. The Testy's last visit to Kodiak was in January. Its next scheduled sailing will be from Homer on Sunday night with scheduled stops in the villages of Yuzinki, Port Lyons, and the city of Kodiak on Monday. And education funding has been a big part of discussions in the Alaska legislature this session, and the uncertainty has forced tough conversations in school districts across the state. KMXT's Brian Venwa reports the Kodiak Island Borough School District is bracing for a flat-based student allocation.
The BSA is how the state decides how to distribute funds per student to every school district. Education funding in the state has been stagnant for 6 years now and hasn't kept up with inflation. This year, KIBSD is preparing for the worst and planning their budget on yet another year of flat funding. Cindy Mika is the school district's superintendent.
With flat funding, if everything stays the same with revenue coming in from the state and the borough with flat funding, our finance department is projecting about a $4 million deficit starting off.
Mika says she wants to maximize efficiency for Kodiak schools. One way to do that is fill every classroom. The current KIBSD Board of Education guideline for both the middle and high schools is 30 students for each teacher. The elementary school has different student-to-teacher ratios for each grade level. Right now, many classrooms aren't filled to capacity. Mika says filling each classroom and finding ways to skim some staff could be part of the solution to the school's budget.
What happens is that, you know, there's always a group of teachers that don't sign their contract for whatever reason. They retire, they resign. They move back to the lower 48. So we're looking at what those are and possibly not refilling those positions.
But Mika was also quick to say while they may not rehire for certain positions, they have no plans for layoffs.
Layoffs is not even on the table. So okay. I'll just say that right up front.
There may be electives on the chopping block this year as well. However, Mika has not done much research into which ones. KIBSD was projected to take about $2.5 million out of its fund balance, which is similar to savings, this year. The state also provided a one-time gift to schools, and the district received more than $1 million in addition to the BSA. The district also had a difficult time filling vacancies, and the budget set aside for those positions will return to the school's fund balance. Mika says they just might be able to make it through the year without dipping into their rainy day fund.
We still might not see as deep of a dip into our fund balance because, as you know, we have had a hard time staffing this year. So positions that were originally budgeted for were not staffed. And so we actually might come out even this year.
There are some legislative fixes on the table. Senate Bill 52 proposes a $1,000 increase to the BSA, which could bring around $5.5 million to the island's school district. But Mika says most of that money would go towards the deficit in their current plan for the budget with a flat BSA. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venwa.
In other news from Juneau, the Alaska House of Representatives passed a resolution to protect Southeast Alaska's troll fishery on Wednesday. House Joint Resolution 5 calls for state and federal agencies to defend Alaska's troll fisheries from a lawsuit that seeks to hold them accountable for the decline in killer whales in the Puget Sound area. The legislation passed on a 35-1 vote. Representative David Eastman, serving District 27 in Anchorage, was the only no vote. The complainant is the Wild Fish Conservancy, a conservation organization based in Washington. Their official position is that terminating Southeast King Salmon troll fishery might allow Chinook salmon to migrate back down the coast through key hunting grounds of the southern resident killer whales. The resolution to protect Alaska's troll fishery was introduced by freshman Representative Rebecca Himshute of Sitka, who sits on the House Special Committee on Fisheries. Many of the region's local governments have passed similar resolutions opposing the lawsuit, including Petersburg, Wrangell, Ketchikan, Sitka, and Juneau. And the Yukon River's chum and king runs have returned at record lows the last 3 years. At a recent meeting, the Alaska Board of Fisheries debated a contentious proposal that would have reduced fishing time for a controversial and lucrative fishery along the Alaska Peninsula called Area M. The board ended up passing some restrictions on the fishery, but it's far short of what YK Delta residents were hoping for. As KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, communities that depend on the Area M fishery aren't happy either.
People from across western Alaska testified in support of limiting fishing time in Area M, saying they haven't been able to feed their families or continue traditions since the chum runs collapsed in 2020. Tanya Ivan is from Russian Mission. She told the board they weren't asking to close the fishery, but rather spread restrictions more equally across the regions.
Our subsistence needs have not been met. My smokehouse and freezer have not had fish in a few years, which means I wasn't able to teach my baby sister and daughters our traditional way of life. What we rely on during the winter, and especially during the Russian Orthodox Great Lent.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries members were divided on reducing fishing time in Area M. Some pointed to the state's subsistence priority, while others cited the economic importance of the fishery. In the end, the board narrowly passed an amendment that restricts some fishing time in June and sets up tiered reductions for the purse seine fleet based on the chum harvest. But it was far short of the sweeping restrictions YK Delta residents were hoping for. After the vote, most of the people in the audience walked out of the room in protest. Robert Walker is the first tribal chief of Anvik, a community on the Yukon River.
It just canceled us, AYK tribal people, right out. It's like we were a foreign country. And we just kind of like got up and left.
Walker says the amendment ignored days of testimony from the region. But the Area M fishery is a vital part of the communities along the Alaska Peninsula and in the Aleutians. Alvin Osterbach, mayor of the Aleutians East Borough, says harvest limits could mean a huge revenue hit for some of the communities there.
By coming in and attacking us like this all the time, it's moving more and more of our families out of the area. And you can see it in the communities. They're just, people are leaving.
He says it's tough to say exactly how this season will play out with the new limits. Area M's South Peninsula was valued at over $33 million last year. In 2021, the average seiner made around $700,000. Harvest caps can drive down the value of the fishery, forcing fishermen to sell their permits. Kylie Thompson, president of the Area M Seiners, says major cuts to that lucrative June fishery, which makes up a quarter of Area M's entire value, could put the fleet in jeopardy. Still, he says the new restrictions are workable.
June is our steady, you know, high-value sockeye, kind of what everybody depends on. And without the June fishery, I mean, that's the straw that breaks the camel's back for that region. The June fishery is so important, because it's relatively stable.
Meanwhile, people from western Alaska who asked for stronger restrictions in Area M are disillusioned with the state's system. Henry Hunter Sr. is the vice chairman of Arutzararamut Native Council in Bethel. He's deeply disappointed in the board. He says it feels like the meeting was stacked against their region and that the board is prioritizing commercial interests over subsistence needs.
They basically commercial fishing. Commercial fishing in Area M is big business. They should be the ones that conserve and manage it for all Alaskans. Not only Area M fishing, commercial fishing, but the subsistence users in the YK Delta.
Hunter thinks the decision means the burden of conservation will continue to rest on people in western Alaska when it should be the board's responsibility to manage for everyone. With help from KUCB's Maggie Nelson, in Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
One sled dog was rescued from an ice floe, and another is still missing after a Kenai Peninsula musher's trailer disconnected from his truck after the fur rendezvous this weekend. Frank Haberman of Clam Gulch was driving his truck southbound from Anchorage Monday with his sled dogs in a trailer. The trailer became dislodged on the Seward Highway and the doors opened, letting the sled dogs loose, said Alex Boyd, assistant fire chief for the Anchorage Fire Department. Boyd said it happened around mile 105 near Indian Creek.
It was low tide at the time, and the dogs sort of scrambled after the accident, obviously being scared and getting out away from the truck and trailer.
Boyd's department got the call around 10:20 a.m. and sent crews down to help rescue the dogs and to make sure that people stopping to help were safe. He says as the tide came in, one of the dogs tried to find higher ground.
And it just happened to be a piece of ice that started moving once the tide came up far enough.
The ice started floating out into Cook Inlet. He says they used water rescue bags to get the dog back uninjured.
Safely a little cold and a little bit wet, but back to shore.
Another dog, Donna, ran toward Girdwood and still hasn't returned home. Haberman, the musher, says people have spotted Donna at Indian Creek and they've set up a trap to try to get her back. He worries because she's skittish, but says he hopes she's found before something happens to her. Donna is a white dog with a brown face, and people in the area are encouraged to call Anchorage's police department if they see her. Boyd with the fire department says some of his crew members had just come from watching mushers at the start of the fur rondi race when they were called down to the highway. He says it's truly an Alaska story.
Not often do we have an opportunity to help out sled dogs who have been involved in vehicle accidents and end up on an ice floe. It's kind of a string of coincidences that ended up putting us there.
Haberman and his team placed 11th in last weekend's fur rondi sprint. And the state of Alaska is proposing to sell more old-growth trees on its land in southern southeast Alaska. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, state managers say they're obligated to conduct the sales despite pushback from community members.
The State Department of Natural Resources' five-year harvest plan proposes timber sales equaling about 62 million board feet. That includes clear-cutting about 2,600 acres of old-growth trees.
The old-growth is marketable currently.
Greg Staunton is the state's area forester for Southeast. The Division of Forestry seeks timber sales as part of its constitutional mandate to pursue using natural resources on public lands. Old-growth logging is controversial for its impacts on the environment and subsistence food sources, like deer and salmon. The U.S. Forest Service froze old-growth sales in 2021, and this year restored the roadless rule, protecting thousands of old-growth acres from logging. But federal protections don't apply to state land. And Staunton says the state doesn't have much choice. He says there just isn't much marketable young growth available in the state's inventory. The proposed sales are in a dozen main areas in the region. Some projects could get started as soon as this year, and others are still in review. Most are near towns. Staunton says that's where the state owns land in Southeast.
A lot of the land base that we've been charged with managing here is in proximity to where communities are. And that's a product of how we were granted land at statehood.
One logging project that's set to begin this year is a controversial timber sale in Whale Pass on Prince of Wales Island. The state would clear cut about 300 acres of old growth near town and build 4 new miles of logging roads.
That decision has been made. I think we have a product out there that's workable. It does not satisfy all people that are, you know, brought their concerns forward. I recognize that.
Some of the Whale Pass logging is within city limits, and most residents oppose it. Staunton says he takes public feedback seriously. He says they've walked the site and considered any potential risks. In the end, it's state land.
While it's adjacent to the community of Whale Pass, and we recognize that, is also legislatively classified state forest. So that's one of its purpose is to be used for providing forest resources, of which, you know, timber is one of the key things that it's meant to provide.
Jimmy Greeley is with the homeowners group Friends of Whale Pass. He spoke with KRBD last fall.
Basically, it would cut the whole clear cut the hillside, and then kind of make Whale Pass not look very very green anymore.
Another group in opposition is the Prince of Wales Community Advisory Council, representing over a dozen communities and tribal governments on the island. They wrote a letter to the state with concerns that the logging is above homes.
They thought to themselves, surely they can't be serious.
That's Katie Rooks. She's with the environmental group Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. They oppose the state's entire five-year plan for several reasons. She says the clear-cutting would scar up land near communities that are pursuing tourism, and there are some projects that are listed as TBD, to be decided.
There's a lot of ambiguity, okay? There's a lot of incomplete information with this particular state five-year plan. For several of these sales, they don't list the acreage, the board feet, or the road miles. In fact, they say in here that the last 3 years of projected sales in this document are uncertain.
The state's timber sales in Southern Southeast cater to two main logging companies, Alcan and Ketchikan, and Viking Lumber on Prince of Wales Island. The two have been requesting the harvests. Staunton says smaller mills couldn't build the infrastructure needed.
Well, in the larger sales where there is significant road to be built, bigger companies, you know, they have more capital resources that they can bring to bear.
The state's Southeast Timber Sale Plan is described in a 36-page document that includes project maps and other details. The public comment deadline is listed as February 28th, but Staunton says they'll continue to accept feedback beyond that. Reporting for Coast Alaska, in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
And in a final news note, Alaska Airlines' iconic Salmon 30 Salmon will soon be a memory. The airline confirmed on Monday that its custom Boeing 737 painted to look like a 129-foot-long Alaska King Salmon is going to get a new look, and it will be cultural rather than fishy. Tim Thompson, Director of Public Relations and Community Marketing for the airline, told the Alaska Beacon that the plane will be painted over after a final ceremonial flight on April 17th. The salmon-painted plane has been in the Alaska Airlines fleet since 2005, when the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute funded the repainting of an aircraft as part of a promotional campaign for Alaska salmon. Alaska Airlines says the yet-to-be-announced replacement will be a new way to honor the culture and history, quote, of our namesake state and our connection to communities across the West Coast, end quote. Fans of the current design have launched an online petition in an attempt to convince the airline to keep it. The name Salmon 30 Salmon is actually older than the first painted jet. The nickname came from a 1987 incident in Juneau when an Alaska Airlines jet was struck by a salmon dropped by a bald eagle.
No slowdown in the services sector. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute. The Institute for Supply Management says its services employment index was up 4 percentage points last month, with the most growth in arts, entertainment, and food service. A new report from the National Association of Realtors says the gap between black and white home ownership is the biggest in 10 years, with more than 70% of whites owning homes compared to just 44% of black Americans. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is suing ExxonMobil, accusing the company of not fully investigating harassment of black employees at its Baton Rouge complex after a black worker discovered a hangman's noose. ExxonMobil told Reuters it disagreed with the EEOC allegations. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the March 3rd edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Remember last week when I mentioned that although spring seemed to have sprung early this year, winter could still pull some tricks on us? Mother Nature went out of her way to prove that statement correct, didn't she? Another kind of wind brought us some extraordinary displays of the aurora earlier this week. Solar winds caused by the coronal mass ejection like the one we had earlier this week have to hit at just the right time for us to see the resulting aurora activity on Earth. Sunspot activity runs in a cycle, and each of those cycles runs about 11 years. The peak of solar activity in each cycle is called the solar maximum, and that's when you can expect to see more aurora activity. We're in solar cycle 25 now, and the peak is predicted to happen between 2023 and 2026. So there could be more auroras to come in the next couple of years. Maybe not to the level of the extraordinary show this week, but time will tell. In the meantime, aurora activity around an equinox tends to get better because cracks often appear in the magnetic field around the Earth. That's where the solar winds sneak in and charge up all those little particles that light up and dance in the wind. So stay tuned as March progresses. Speaking of dancing in the light, the musical Chicago opens this weekend on the main stage at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. This is a spectacular show filled with music, dancing, and a compelling storyline based in 1920s Chicago. Shows are Friday and Saturday nights this weekend and Thursday through Saturday next week. All shows start at 7 p.m. Please note, Chicago's Broadway Touring Company recommends this show for audiences 13 and older because of the mature content. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Well, it is Friday, March 3rd. The year is 2023, and we cracked 8 a.m. this morning for sunrise. Sunrise was 7:58 a.m. Sunset tonight, 6:45 p.m. That gives us 10 hours, thankfully, and 47 minutes of daylight. That's a gain of just about 5 minutes, 4 minutes and 59 seconds. Record high on this day was 50 degrees. That was in 1996 and again in 2003. Record low was 2 degrees. That was back in 1994. Our sunrise for tomorrow will be 7:55 a.m. And looking at our marine weather, from Marmot Island to Sitkanak, there's a gale warning through tonight. Today, northwest winds of 45 knots, seas to 19 feet with freezing spray. Tonight, northwest winds of 45 knots, seas to 19 feet, freezing spray. And tomorrow, northwest winds of 30 knots, seas to 13 feet with freezing spray. Looking at Chiniac Bay, there's a gale warning through tonight and a heavy freezing spray warning today. Today, northwest winds of 40 knots, seas to 7 feet with heavy freezing spray. Tonight, northwest winds of 35 knots, seas to 6 feet with freezing spray. Looking over at the Shelikof, there's a gale warning through tonight and a heavy freezing spray warning through tonight. Today, northwest winds of 40 knots, gusts to 50 knots out of bays and passes, seas to 11 feet, extreme freezing spray on the western edge of Shelikof at a rate of 4 centimeters per hour or greater may rapidly accumulate on vessels. Tonight, northwest winds of 40 knots diminishing to 30 knots after midnight, seas to 10 feet with heavy freezing spray. And Saturday, northwest winds of 25 knots, seas to 5 feet, subsiding to 3 feet in the afternoon with freezing spray. A few minutes for some community announcements. There will be a Board of Education work session. That's on Monday, March 6th. This upcoming Monday at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, that's F140 of the old high school wing. The meeting agenda and packet for this meeting can be viewed on Board Docs. More information, reach out to Trinity, Secretary to the Board of Education. That's 907-486-7566. And a note for elementary school families, please mark your calendars. March 8th and 9th, that's up this upcoming week, will be early release days for all KIBSD elementary schools. Grades K through 5 will be dismissed at 1:50 both days due to scheduled family teacher conferences. Please call your school office if you have any questions. And the 2023 Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival is now collecting submissions. Island Trails Network is collecting submissions for the film festival, which will be Friday, April 7th. The deadline to submit your entries is the end of the month. That's March 31st. So get out and start filming your adventures. Alaska Sea Grant is hosting a Business of Fishing workshop in Kodiak on March 15th, that's a Wednesday, from 9 to 4 p.m. at Fisherman's Hall. The workshop will cover business planning, tax strategies, and risk management. The event is free, but advance registration is required. Lunch will be provided. Visit alaskaseagrant.org/events to register or contact Julie at 907-250-9512 for more information. And the Alaska Business Development Center will be providing in-person tax preparation again in many villages throughout rural Alaska. If you live in rural Alaska, don't send in your tax documents to ABDC yet. There's a good chance their preparers are coming to you. To stay updated on whether ABDC is preparing taxes in your community, you can visit their website. That's abdc.org. www.ilandbyways.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Spotlight is brought to you in part by Creighton Chiropractic Clinic, offering chiropractic care and massage therapy in a peaceful, relaxing, and beautiful atmosphere. Located at 814 Resinoff Drive across from the high school, 487-9798, Creighton Chiropractic Clinic. We got your back.